It is Friday, July 17th, and the week is ending with a massive pile of data to sort through. Here is the reality of where we stand and why the noise is finally starting to clear. The Moonshot AI company recently released a new model called Kimi K2, pronounced Kimi K2. It is a 2.8 trillion parameter model that has effectively ended the debate over whether Chinese artificial intelligence labs are just copying Western technology. The model shows that these labs are now capable of independent, large-scale pre-training that matches frontier-level performance. Here is the thing. For a long time, the industry assumed that proprietary frontier labs like OpenAI and Anthropic held a multi-month lead, protected by an impenetrable technological moat. Kimi K2 proves that moat is drying up. It is not necessarily a GPT-5 killer, but it is a proof of concept that open-weight models are catching up at an alarming rate. The shift here is about where the value actually lives. We have spent the last 2 years obsessed with who has the smartest model, but that era is ending. Intelligence is becoming a commodity. And when high-level output is cheap and accessible, the advantage shifts away from the labs and toward the people who can actually build products. It is a hell of a shift for companies whose entire business model depends on maintaining massive 90% inference margins. If you are an enterprise, you no longer have to rely on a small, closed-off group of labs. You can integrate frontier-level capabilities into your own private infrastructure, which is a massive win for privacy and cost control. But there is a catch. While Kimi K2 looks great in viral demos of coding tasks, it still struggles with real-world engineering. It is expensive to run, it is slow, and it is prone to hallucinations when you move past basic front-end shells into complex, long-horizon reasoning. That creates a weird split in the room. On one hand, you have the hype cycle, which is treating this as if the gates have been blown wide open. On the other hand, serious enterprise engineers are still treating it as a secondary tool because they value reliability over the thrill of a new benchmark. It is a classic case of vibe versus utility, and honestly, the market is starting to notice. Investors are cooling off on the idea that throwing billions at raw model development is a guaranteed win. We are seeing major semiconductor stocks take a hit as the market realizes that simply having the biggest stack of chips does not automatically create a competitive advantage. The focus is moving toward agentic utility, tools that can actually perform autonomous, long-running tasks for a business. There is also the safety side of this, which is a total vacuum. Western models go through months of pre-release vetting and restrictive guardrails. Kimi K2 is unconstrained. Because the weights are open, there is no way to lock them down or control how they are used. This changes the entire security conversation. We are moving from a world where we tried to keep the genie in the bottle to a world where the genie is out, and we have to figure out how to live with the consequences of its deployment. It is not about controlling access anymore. It is about managing risk. Ultimately, the industry is forcing a pivot. The labs that refuse to move from a model-first strategy to a product-first strategy are going to find themselves isolated. We are seeing this already with the friction between some labs and their partners, like the complex strategic balancing act between OpenAI and Apple. If you lose your strategic alliances while your technical lead evaporates, you are in a shitty situation. The winners here aren't necessarily the ones with the most impressive research paper. They are the ones building the orchestration layers that can swap between models as the market shifts. It is about being flexible, building efficient infrastructure, and proving that you can turn a model into a product that actually works for a customer. Anyway, the era of the all-knowing, isolated frontier model is over. We are moving into a fragmented, agentic ecosystem, and frankly, it is about time. That shift toward practical, agentic AI is clear. But it is not just tech companies pushing boundaries. The government is testing its own limits too. The Department of Justice is shifting its posture toward the press, most notably in the case of the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. Historically, internal guidelines treated journalists as a last resort in legal matters. Now, the government is increasingly using reporters as material witnesses to force the disclosure of confidential sources. Meanwhile, corporate actors like eBay have utilized units to stalk and harass journalists who criticize their spending. It is, to put it plainly, a concerted effort to make the cost of reporting so high that it becomes unsustainable for anyone without a massive legal defense fund. Here is the thing about this. It is not just about keeping secrets. It is about a fundamental collapse of the norms that protect independent inquiry. When the state treats a reporter like a target and a corporation treats a journalist like an enemy combatant, they aren't just managing information. They are actively trying to kill the messenger. If sources fear they will be exposed, the investigative capacity of the press effectively evaporates. We are looking at a future where accountability is a luxury item, accessible only to the biggest players. This erosion of trust isn't happening in a vacuum. President Trump recently used a primetime address to frame existing cybersecurity vulnerabilities as proof of systemic election fraud. He is pushing the SAVE Act, or Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, which would require documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections. The goal here is to create a perpetual state of grievance, where any future electoral loss can be labeled as the result of cheating rather than a legitimate vote count. It is a hell of a strategy. By framing the system as fundamentally broken, the administration pressures states to centralize control, which would dismantle the decentralized security architecture that currently keeps our elections resilient. And it works as a trap. If opponents focus on the facts, they lose the chance to talk about the economy. If they ignore it, they allow the administration to set the terms of the entire political battlefield. It is performative governance at its absolute peak. We see this same performative rot in the way our political parties are operating. Legislative governance is increasingly being traded for brand building. Politicians like J.D. Vance, pronounced V-A-N-C-E, are prioritizing podcasts and fringe rhetoric over the actual, boring work of policy stewardship. This is happening because the primary system forces candidates to cater to the most extreme, disaffected elements of their base. When you have to choose between keeping your seat and doing your job, the job usually loses. It is easy to look at all of this and decide the whole thing is just a giant psychological operation, which is a popular theory right now. People are increasingly retreating into alternative information ecosystems, convinced that reality itself is being manipulated by hidden hands. While I think that's a bit of a stretch, I understand the impulse. When your institutions stop working and your leaders start acting like performers in a low-rent reality show, skepticism becomes a survival mechanism. But there is a different way to look at this, one that is less about conspiracies and more about the mechanics of power. We are seeing a major shift as authoritarian goals collide with a public that is, for the first time in a while, starting to feel its own weight. The 1850s saw parties break down because an elite minority tried to hoard power, and that chaos eventually forced a correction. We are in that kind of moment now. The current volatility isn't necessarily a sign that the system has failed. It is a sign that we have stopped enforcing the guardrails we already have. We are trapped in cycles, like our failed punishment strategy against Iran, because we keep using outdated models that only serve to harden our adversaries. We are obsessed with the spectacle of the fight rather than the outcome of the game. That is a shitty situation, but it is also a choice. If we want a functional democracy, we have to stop waiting for the system to save itself and start doing the work of enforcing the laws that are already on the books. Anything else is just noise. The DOJ is playing a dangerous game with press freedom. Elsewhere, the same obsession with short-term gain is rewriting the rules of professional sports. Major League Soccer is currently using the upcoming 2026 World Cup as a massive marketing funnel to pivot away from being a retirement league. They are betting millions on localized watch parties and high-end training facilities to lure casual American sports fans and international stars alike. It is a transition from passive growth to active market influence, which, honestly, is a hell of a thing to try and pull off with a straight face. The league is treating local fan bases like product samples. They are pouring cash into high-production infrastructure in non-host cities, hoping that if you build the communal vibe, the season ticket sales will follow. But here is the risk. History shows that these interest spikes usually evaporate the moment the tournament ends. They are building for a future that might just be a temporary spotlight. Meanwhile, FIFA is busy showing everyone exactly how a governing body becomes a commercial conglomerate. They have expanded the World Cup to 48 teams and introduced hydration breaks that function primarily as convenient windows for advertising revenue. They have even started interfering in disciplinary outcomes to suit political interests. It is a shift from sporting integrity toward a model where every match is just another piece of scalable inventory. The move toward video assistant referee, or VAR technology, has only made this worse. Every goal is now a litigation event rather than a moment of spontaneous athletic achievement. They have replaced the flow of the game with a sort of administrative waiting room. The sport is no longer just being played, it is being managed. We see this same obsession with structural optimization playing out in the NBA Summer League. The Washington Wizards are evaluating three young prospects, A.J. Dibansa, Will Riley, and Tree Johnson, not on their highlights, but on their ability to solve systemic bottlenecks. Dibansa is moving toward a versatile forward profile, while Riley is facing a brutal trade-off between his offensive upside and his defensive liabilities. Tree Johnson looks like a limited specialist who will need his teammates to cover for him constantly. It is a cold, clinical way to look at talent development. Success in the regular season will not be about raw scoring totals. It will be about who can stop conceding points during pick-and-roll situations. If you cannot fit into the team's coordination, if you cannot handle the defensive floor, you simply do not get to play. This same logic is hitting the Cleveland Browns. They are coming off a 5-12 season and are now in a full-scale institutional reset. They have cleared out staff and are stuck in a weird purgatory at the quarterback position. They are trying to develop Shedeur Sanders while keeping an aging, injury-prone Deshaun Watson on the books. It is a structural nightmare that pretty much guarantees the offensive line will never find any chemistry. They have also traded away elite talent like Myles Garrett and moved on from their defensive coordinator. The front office is essentially betting that they can modernize their scheme while ignoring the fact that they have gutted the only unit that kept them competitive. It is a classic cycle of mismanagement where they are sacrificing the present for a future that looks increasingly unlikely to arrive. Even the betting markets are demanding this kind of clinical, emotionless discipline. In the Haskell Day late pick 5, the smart move is not to diversify your bets in hopes of a miracle. It is to identify the anchor horses, the ones with actual fitness and data to back them up, and ignore the public favorites driven by recency bias. You have to be willing to fade the popular choice when the underlying data tells you it is a trap. Everything here points to the same trend. Whether it is FIFA, the NBA, or the financial landscape, the era of romanticized sporting merit is fading. We are entering an era of high-frequency, infrastructure-heavy, and financially optimized entertainment. It is efficient, it is profitable, and it is almost entirely devoid of the stuff that made the game fun in the first place. Anyway, that is the state of play. Sports are becoming a cold, calculated business. That same desperate search for efficiency is quietly breaking the back of our healthcare system. The U.S. healthcare system is staring down a massive, hidden inflationary spike. Hospitals have been absorbing rising costs for complex inpatient procedures by shrinking their own profit margins, but that strategy is hitting a wall. Since hospital insurer contracts are negotiated over 2 to 3 year cycles, these current losses act like a coiled spring. Once those contracts come up for renewal, hospitals will inevitably pass those accumulated costs onto private insurers. That will lead to a sharp, delayed jump in the actual healthcare costs households have to pay. Here is the thing, and it is a hell of a thing to realize. Our official government data doesn't see this coming. Because the prices negotiated between hospitals and insurance companies are treated as trade secrets, economists are flying blind. They rely on incomplete, infrequent data that misses the reality of the balance sheet. It is a classic case of institutional rot where the system is designed to hide the very signals that show it's breaking. We are essentially waiting for a bill to come due that the official numbers are currently pretending doesn't exist. This same preference for short-term obfuscation over long-term infrastructure is playing out everywhere. Look at asset management. Legacy custodians like Schwab and Fidelity are still running on 50-year-old mainframe systems. It forces financial advisors to stitch together fragmented, third-party software just to handle basic tasks like billing and reporting. It is inefficient as hell. They prioritize rent-seeking. Think interest on idle client cash or payment for order flow, over actually building a modern, integrated platform. It creates a system where high-quality advice is a luxury good, locked away from the mass market because of administrative bloat. Then you have the venture capital model, which is arguably even more misaligned. The standard 2% management fee and 20% profit share gives fund managers a guaranteed income regardless of performance. It creates a perverse incentive to prioritize raising bigger and bigger funds rather than delivering actual returns to investors. Founders get caught in the crossfire, too. Once they take that money, they often stop optimizing for a healthy, sustainable business and start optimizing for exit velocity. They overhire and diversify prematurely just to inflate valuations for the next round. It is a recipe for building companies that look great in a pitch deck but lack the internal plumbing to survive a real market correction. Even our food supply is showing the cracks of a system that prioritizes scale over stability. We are seeing a major outbreak of the parasite Cyclospora, Cyclospora, linked to fresh produce. It's not just a bad batch of greens. It's the result of a globalized distribution model that relies on centralized, massive facilities that create a huge surface area for contamination. Federal public health surveillance has been hollowed out to the point where state agencies are left to act as stopgaps. The system is so brittle that we are seeing federal officials start to pivot toward niche, personalized diets as a form of self-defense. They are essentially telling us that the centralized supply chain is too broken to fix, so you are on your own. The common thread here is that we have become obsessed with the flashy side of things, the marketing, the rapid acquisition, the viral growth, while letting the actual unglamorous infrastructure rot. Whether it is the grid, the food chain, or the financial markets, we are choosing short-term convenience over the hard work of building systems that can actually last. Companies that are actually winning are the ones doing the boring work. Take battery energy storage systems, or BESS. They are moving away from being just a buffer and becoming the literal foundation of grid stability. By using grid-forming software, they are replacing the physical inertia of old fossil fuel turbines. It is faster, cheaper, and more resilient. The organizations that treat this as a software-defined infrastructure asset are going to thrive. The ones still clinging to slow-to-deploy, traditional power plants are going to get crushed by the integration costs. It turns out, if you want a competitive advantage that can't be easily copied, you don't start with a marketing campaign. You start with precision, speed, and quality control in your back-end operations. That is the only way to build a reputation that isn't just a facade. The rest of the market might be busy chasing the next viral win, but the real money and the real stability is being built in the background in the systems that the rest of the world is too impatient to maintain. Hospitals are struggling to keep the lights on while chasing growth. It is a fragile model, much like the one currently failing our horse racing tracks. Horse racing tracks from Woodbine to Colonial Downs are facing a series of operational shutdowns. The cause is environmental volatility, specifically dangerous air quality from wildfires and localized infrastructure failures like damaged culverts. These events expose a fundamental fragility in the industry. Facilities often rely on singular access points for equipment and people. When those choke points fail, business stops entirely. It is a hell of a thing to see an entire industry held hostage by a piece of broken civil engineering or a bad weather day. It highlights a recurring theme across high-stakes fields: the gap between rigid, centralized systems and the messy reality of the world. A few other things worth knowing today. First, look, if you are trading stocks based on daily price swings, you are basically just gambling with a more expensive hobby. Most retail investors lack a real investment thesis, which means they panic sell the moment a chart turns red. It is a shitty way to build wealth, and honestly, you are just turning your own anxiety into a net loss. Then there is the state of modern cinema, where technology is starting to eat the story for breakfast. Directors like Christopher Nolan are obsessed with massive IMAX cameras and practical effects, but the high resolution is a double-edged sword. When you prioritize that level of technical spectacle, every single pore and flaw on an actor's face gets magnified until the close-up shots feel like a distraction rather than a performance. It turns out that when you can see everything, you stop actually looking at the movie. That is the state of things. Have a good weekend, and we will catch up on Monday.